Welcome back to the deep dive. If you're building with large language models now, you definitely know the pain. It feels like it feels like you're constantly fighting the model, right? Spending ages crafting these really long, complicated prompt templates, tweaking words here and there, just hoping it
Oh,
works.
absolutely. That whole trial and error process,
Yeah.
it's more art than engineering sometimes, and it's incredibly brittle. You change one little thing, the underlying model, maybe some part of your pipeline, and boom, the whole thing can just fall apart. You're back to square one, tweaking prompts again. It just doesn't scale for real software development.
Exactly. It really does feel like we're stuck working at a super low level. And that's precisely why today we're going to really dig into DSPY. That's DSPY, Declarative Self-Improving Python. It's a framework that's aiming to completely change that game, promising reliable, maintainable AI software that actually works across different models.
Yeah, the creators use this analogy that I think really hits home. They say that fiddling with manual prompts is like writing assembly code back in the day. Super tedious, error-prone, DSPy, they argue, is the jump to a proper high-level language for AI. Think moving from assembly to C, or maybe like SQL for data. It's that kind of abstraction layer.
Okay, that's a powerful comparison. So let's unpack this. How does DSPy actually deliver on this promise? We'll structure our deep dive around what seem to be the three key pillars. First, this idea of declarative programming, changing how we even structure the code. Second, the automatic optimization part, how it tunes itself. That sounds critical. And finally, what this means for production resilience and, the actual performance gains we see. They've got some interesting case studies later. So let's start right at the foundation. If we're not writing these long prompt strings, what are we doing? How do we actually program the LLM?
Right. The fundamental shift, the big idea in DSP, is forcing you to separate the what from the how. So separating your intent, what you actually want the task to achieve, from the messy specifics of how you talk to the language model to get it done. And this separation happens through two main concepts: signatures and modules.
Okay, so instead of me thinking, okay, I need this specific intro phrase, then these instructions, then this output format example to get GPT-4 to summarize this text, the mindset shifts more to I need a summarizer component, and I don't really care how it prompts as long as it summarizes correctly, whether it's running on GPT-4 or Claude or something else. Is that the idea?
You nailed it. That's exactly the architectural change. A signature is that declarative piece. It defines the task specification. It completely replaces needing to hand code those long, specific prompt instructions for every single task. When you write a DSP signature, you're just defining what the LLM needs to do, the inputs it takes, the outputs it should produce, not the nitty-gritty of the prompt itself.
Can you give us a concrete example? Because, often the reason prompts get so long is we're trying to cram in all the context, the constraints, the output format.
Yeah, good point. So in DSPy, the simplest way uses this shorthand. If you just need something to answer questions, you can declare it literally as question answer. That tells DSPy, okay, this component expects one input field named question, and it needs to generate one output field named answer. Then DSPy's compiler, which we'll get into later, takes that simple declaration and figures out the best actual prompt to send to whatever model you're using, GPT 3.5, Llama, whatever.
Okay, simple question answering is one thing,
Right,
but
yeah.
structured output is usually where things get really painful, right? Like if I'm extracting product features from reviews, I don't just want a block of text back. I need maybe a list, and each item needs a feature name and a sentiment score. Trying to get that reliably with traditional prompts often means writing complex parsing logic afterwards to clean up the LLM's messy text output.
Exactly. And that's where signatures really shine, because they let you bring in structure and type safety right at the definition stage. You're not just dealing with basic strings. You start using explicit definitions like dspy.inputField and dspy.outputField. So, for your example, extracting features, you could define an output field that explicitly says it must be a list of dictionaries, and each dictionary must have, say, a feature name key, string, and a sentiment key, which has to be one of positive, negative, or neutral.
Ah, so I could literally define something like review text, div features, list dict name dot stay, sentiment, literal post, neg, new, using Python type hints almost.
Precisely like that. You're defining the structure and the types declaratively. And DSPy uses that information. It enforces those constraints when it optimizes the prompts and, critically, when it runs the program. This completely decouples the interface, what you as the developer need, from the messy implementation details of how the LLM generates it. You avoid writing tons of Brill code just to parse the LLM's output string into something usable. Plus, it makes your code reusable. If you swap the underlying LLM from, say, GPT-4 to Claude 3, your signature stays the same. Your downstream code that expects that list of dictionaries keeps working. It doesn't break just because Claude phrases things slightly differently.
Okay, that makes sense. So the signature is the interface contract, then what defines the how, like the actual strategy the model uses? Does it just guess? Or is that where modules come in?
That's exactly the role of modules. Modules are the bits that actually run. They implement a specific signature. Think of them like layers in a neural network library like PyTorch. They're building blocks you can combine. Each module wraps up a particular prompting technique or reasoning strategy.
Right. So like the simplest one is probably dspy.predict. Just takes input, gives output based on the signature. But for harder tasks, we often need the model to think step by step. How does that work?
Yeah, the classic example is dspy, chain of thought, or CoT. Instead of just hoping the model figures out the reasoning, this model automatically adds an intermediate step to the process. It modifies the signature internally to include a field, usually called rationale, where the model has to write out its thinking before it gives the final answer. When dspy compiles a prompt for a CoT module, it knows to insert instructions like reasoning, let's think step by step, or something similar right before asking for the final output field.
And the key is I, as the developer, don't write that let's think step by step bit into a prompt string myself and cross my fingers. I just use the dspy chain of thought module for that task, and the framework makes sure the model is guided to produce that reasoning trace.
Precisely. It makes the use of these techniques systematic, not just hopeful hinks in a prompt, and that leads to much more reliable results. Then you have other modules for more complex stuff, like interacting with external tools, which is crucial for grounding LLMs in facts, right? Take dspy.react. That stands for reasoning and acting. When you use a React module, dspy structures the interaction to follow this loop. First, thought, the model thinks about what to do. Then action, it decides to use a tool like call a search engine API. Then observation, it gets the result back from the tool. And it repeats this loop.
So again, the developer isn't writing this super complex prompt that tries to explain the whole React process. They just say, use the dspy React module here, provide the available tools, and the framework handles orchestrating that complex back and forth.
Exactly. And there are modules like dspy, Retrieve, specifically designed to integrate smoothly with things like vector databases or search indexes, like Kolber TV2, to pull in relevant context documents.
Okay, so we have these building blocks, predict, chain of thought, react, retrieve. How do they fit together without becoming a tangled mess, which sometimes happens with complex prompt chains?
Yeah, composition is really elegant here. Let's take a standard RAG pipeline retrieval augmented generation. In dspy, you want to write one giant prompt telling the model, first search for documents, then read them, then answer the question based on them. Instead, you define your own RAG module, maybe call it myrag. Inside that module's forward method, just like in PyTorch, you'd have clear Python code. Step one, call a dspy retrieve module, passing it the user's question. It returns some context passages. Step two, call a dspy.chainofthought module, passing it both the original question and the context you just retrieved. It generates the final answer using the context.
I see. So the logic, the flow of the pipeline, is explicit Python code. It's not hidden inside some massive, hard-to-read prompt string. If my retriever isn't working well, I just swap out the dspy retrieve part for a different one. If I want a simpler generation, I can swap chain of thought for predict. That makes it super modular and much easier to maintain and understand. That portability seems huge.
It really is. And the best part, once you've defined this program using these modules, you don't then have to manually tweak the prompts inside those modules. You tell dspy to compile the whole program.
Right. Okay. So we've got the architecture, signatures for the what, modules for the how, composed together in Python. But like you said, even a good architecture doesn't guarantee performance. In normal machine learning, this is where optimization comes in tuning model weights. Here, it sounds like we're tuning something different, like the actual prompt instructions in the example shown to the model. That's the job of this dspy compiler, #tag2.1about1. The role of the compiler and teleprompters.
Exactly. The dspy compiler is where the self-improving part really happens. Its job isn't just to run your modular program. Its mission is to systematically optimize any program you write in dspy, could be simple, could be complex, to get the best possible score on whatever metric you care about. Maybe that's accuracy, maybe it's F1 score for semantics, maybe just exact string match, whatever you define. And crucially, it does this optimization using a training set, but often a surprisingly small one. We're talking maybe just tens or a couple of hundred examples, not thousands.
Okay, that sounds powerful.
Yeah.
Accelerated the tuning massively. But how does it optimize text? Like the natural language instructions inside the prompts? That seems tricky.
Yeah, that's handled by a core abstraction in the compiler called the teleprompter. Think of a teleprompter as being like your Atom Optimizer or SGD in deep learning, but designed for optimizing prompting strategies, not just weights. Teleprompters are these general-purpose optimization algorithms within DSPy that figure out how to tune the key parameters of your modules. And those parameters are mainly, one, the actual instructions, the natural language guidance given to the LLM for that module's task. Two, the selection of few-shot examples, which demonstrations from your training data are most effective to include in the prompt for in-context learning. And three, sometimes if you're using certain optimizers like Bootstrap Fine-Tune, it can even optimize the underlying LLM weights themselves, particularly for smaller models.
Wow. So the big contrast here is it gets rid of the human guesswork, right? I'm not sitting there trying out different instruction phrasings or handpicking the three best examples hoping they work.
Yeah.
Exactly. That whole manual intuition-driven process is replaced by the framework's optimization. The teleprompter automatically generates candidate instructions, automatically selects few-shot examples, tests them on your data, and iterates. It's learning how to prompt the model for your specific task and your specific metric based on empirical results. It's data-driven prompt engineering, hashtag 2.2 inside the optimization process, MIPROV2 example.
Okay, let's maybe get into the weeds a bit on one of these teleprompters. You mentioned MIPROV2, max something.
MIPRO2, yeah. Maximum Information Prompt Optimization, version 2. Understanding how it works kind of shows the cleverness involved. It generally operates in three main stages. First is the bootstrapping stage. Here, the optimizer takes your initial program, maybe it's just zero shot, no examples yet, and runs it many times on your small training data set. The really important thing it does here is collect successful traces. A trace records everything, the input, the final output, but also all the intermediate steps taken by every module. So if you had a chain of thought module, it records the rationale generated. If you had a React module, it records the thoughts, actions, observations.
Hang on. If my training data only has, say, the input question and the final correct answer, how does the system know if the intermediate rationale or the intermediate action was correct? We don't usually have labels for those middle steps, do we?
That's a fantastic question, and it's where the bootstrapping is really clever. It handles those missing intermediate labels automatically. The system runs the whole program, collects all these complete traces, input, intermediates, output, and then it filters them. It only keeps the traces where the final output actually matched the correct label in your training data according to your chosen metric, like exact match or F1. So by keeping only the traces that led to a successful end result, it's effectively mining high quality examples of good intermediate steps without needing explicit labels for them. It learns what internal reasoning leads to external success.
Ah, okay. That's smart. It works backwards from the final known good answer to figure out which intermediate steps were likely helpful. That gets around a huge bottleneck in training complex pipelines.
Exactly. No need for painstakingly labeling intermediate thoughts or actions. So once it has this collection of successful traces, basically, examples of the program working well, it moves to stage two, the grounded proposal stage. Here, MIPRO actually uses an LLM, often the same one you're trying to optimize for, to generate candidate instructions or prompts for each module in your program. It gives the LLM context, like your program's code structure, the input data examples, and critically, those successful traces it just bootstrapped. It asks the LLM, essentially, based on these examples of success, can you draft some better instructions for this specific module's task?
So the LLM itself is helping write better prompts for itself, based on evidence of what worked.
Yes, exactly. The proposals aren't random guesses. They're grounded in the successful execution data. Then comes the final stage, the discrete search stage. Now it has a pool of candidate instructions and a pool of good few-shot example traces. It needs to figure out the best combination. It starts sampling different combinations, try this instruction with these two examples, try that instruction with those three examples, creating candidate prompts. It evaluates how well the program performs with these candidate prompts, usually on small batches of the training data to be efficient. And here's another clever bit. It often uses a surrogate model, a cheaper, faster model, to predict which combinations are likely to perform well, guiding the search. This avoids having to run expensive tests on the main LLM for every single combination. It smartly explores the space of possible prompts.
Okay, this sounds computationally intensive upfront, though. Bootstrapping, proposing, searching. How much does this optimization step typically cost, and how long does it take? Is it practical?
That's a fair question. The initial compute cost is definitely there, but the source material suggests it's often surprisingly efficient for many common tasks. They mention typical optimization runs for simple programs costing maybe around $2 USD in API calls and taking perhaps 20 minutes or so, obviously depending on the model, the data size, and the complexity. So it's an upfront investment, but the idea is that this systematic optimization gives you much higher quality, more reliable results than potentially days of manual tweaking, and saves costs during inference later because the prompts are more effective. Pay a bit now for quality assurance. #2.3, composing optimizers and advanced strategies.
You also mentioned earlier that these optimizers, these teleprompters, can be composed. That sounds interesting. You're not just stuck with one approach.
Right. The composability is really powerful for pushing performance boundaries. For example, you could first run MIPRV2 that focuses on optimizing the natural language instructions and finding the best few-shot examples, basically, perfecting the prompting strategy for a given large model. Then you could take the program that MIPRV2 produced, which now includes really good prompts and examples, and feed that into a different optimizer, say Bootstrap Fine-Tune. Bootstrap Fine-Tune uses those high-quality traces collected during the MIPR run, which show successful reasoning, to actually fine-tune the weights of a smaller, cheaper LM. DSPy packages this combination sometimes as DSPy, better together. You use the big model's optimized traces to teach the small model.
Wow, okay. So the compiler effectively generates a high-quality, tailored data set for fine-tuning a smaller model, just as a byproduct of optimizing the prompts for the large one.
Precisely. It leverages the knowledge captured in those successful traces from the capable model to efficiently train a less capable one without needing a huge, separately labeled fine-tuning data set. And beyond composing different optimization techniques, DSPy also supports higher level strategies like ensembling. After the search stage finds maybe the top three or top five best performing candidate programs, each with slightly different optimized prompts, you can wrap them in a DSPy.ensemble module. When you run the ensemble, it executes all those top candidates in parallel and then aggregates their outputs, maybe using simple majority voting to get a final answer. This adds robustness and often boosts accuracy even further.
Okay, the architecture sounds solid. The optimization process is clever. But, you know, the proof is in the pudding, right? What about the actual results? Let's shift to the empirical evidence now. The source material had some compelling case studies. Let's start with that math reasoning one, GSM8K. That's known to be tough for LLMs.
Yeah, GSM8K is a great benchmark for complex reasoning. They tested on both GPT-3.5 Turbo Instruct, a capable proprietary model, and also Llama 2.13b chat, a popular open source one. And the baseline results before DSPy compilation really hammered home the need for better prompting.
How bad was it initially?
Pretty dramatic. If they just use a simple vanilla program, basically zero shot, just question answer, GPT-3.5 only got 24.0% accuracy, and the Llama 13 billion parameter model, it was down at a shocking 7.0%, 7%.
Wow, 7%. So basically unusable for that task out of the box, especially the smaller model.
Completely. It just confirms that these models, even good ones, need significant guidance for complex multi-step problems. They can't just guess their way through word problems reliably.
Okay, so then what happened when they took that failing vanilla program and just compiled it using DSPy? Using that bootstrapping optimization.
This result was really striking. Just compiling that simple vanilla program using Bootstrap by 2, meaning bootstrapping with two examples per prompt, took GPT-3.5 from that 24.0% all the way up to 64.7% accuracy on the development set.
Just from automatic optimization.
Yeah.
Without explicitly telling it to use chain of thought or anything.
Exactly. DSPy's optimizer figured out, just from the data and the success metric, that generating some kind of implicit reasoning steps, even within the DSPy predict module, was necessary to succeed on that math task. It learned a better prompting strategy automatically.
Okay, that's impressive for the simple module. What about when they did explicitly use a more sophisticated module, like DSPy.chainofthought? Did compilation still help much if the starting point was already better?
Oh, yeah. The gains were still massive. The zero-shot QC program for GPT-3.5 started reasonably well at 56.0%. But after compiling it with Bootstrap, that jumped significantly to 80.3%. And when they then used an ensemble of the best compiled QT programs, they reached 88.3% accuracy. And here's a key comparison. These compiled cube programs either matched or actually beat the performance they got when using the standard benchmark approach, which involves manually curated, expert-written, few-shot examples of reasoning, plus human creasy.
So the automated compiler generated prompts and examples that were better than the ones crafted by human experts for that benchmark.
That's what the data showed. It systematically found more effective ways to prompt the model than the human design ones for that specific task and model. It really underscores the power of data-driven optimization over manual intuition.
And what about the smaller llama model? Did compilation rescue it from that terrible 7% score?
It did, and the jump was even more profound in relative terms. They tested more complex programs too, like one called Reflection, which uses multiple reasoning attempts and compares them. For Llama 2 13B, the optimized reflection program reached 49.0% accuracy. Think about that jump from maybe 4% fuchsia vanilla up to nearly 50% accuracy purely through composing these generic modules and letting the compiler optimize them.
That's incredible. Taking a relatively small open source model from nearly useless to genuinely competitive on a hard task. Just through better programming and automated optimization.
Yeah.
That changes the economics entirely, doesn't it? You might not need the absolute biggest, most expensive model if DSPy can optimize a smaller one this well. The takeaway seems clear. DSPy isn't just tweaking prompts. It's fundamentally lifting the capabilities of the underlying models, sometimes dramatically.
Right. The second case study looked at Hotpot QA, which is multi-hop question answering. This means a model needs to find and combine information from multiple documents or search results to answer the question. It often requires generating intermediate search queries. They combined DSPy programs with a Kolber TV2 retriever for finding relevant passages.
Okay, so this tests the composition of modules like Retrieve, maybe Chain of Thought or React. What kind of program did they build?
They tested a few, including a basic multi-hop program. This one was designed to mimic more complex systems by explicitly generating, I think, two search queries, one after the other, retrieving context for each, and then synthesizing the final answer.
And how did the performance look for this multi-step reasoning and retrieval task, starting with GPT 3.5?
The zero-shot multi-hop program started at 36.9% exact match. So getting the answer exactly right about 37% of the time. Compiling that same program logic using Bootstrap lifted the score considerably, up to 48.7%, and then creating an ensemble of the best compiled versions pushed it further to 54.7% EM. Again, we see these substantial systematic gains just from optimizing the prompting strategy, the instructions and examples, without touching the core program logic.
And what about the smaller model angle here? Did compilation make the Llama 13B model competitive on this multi-hop task too?
Yes, and this really reinforces the point about accessibility and cost-effectiveness. When they compiled the multi-hop program for the Llama 213B model using Bootstrap, it achieved 42.0% EM. Now, that's still lower than the compiled GPT 3.5, naturally, but 42% EM on Hotpot QA for a 13B parameter model is actually very respectable. It puts it in the same ballpark as results reported in research papers using much larger or heavily fine-tuned models. So DSPy optimization allows this mid-sized open model to really punch above its weight on a complex task.
And you mentioned combining compilation with actual fine-tuning earlier. Do they show how that plays out economically?
They did, using a much smaller model. T5 large, which only has about 770 million parameters. Tiny compared to GPT 3.5 or even Llama 13B. They use the Bootstrap fine-tune optimizer on the multi-hop program. Remember, this uses the successful traces generated during prompt optimization to fine-tune the model's weights, the result. The fine-tuned T5 large reached 39.3% EM on Hotpot QA. That's a remarkably capable multi-hop QA system running on a very small, efficient model. The inference cost would be orders of magnitude lower than running GPT 3.5 for every query. It shows a clear path. Use DSPy compilation perhaps first with a larger model to generate high-quality reasoning traces, then use those traces via Bootstrap fine-tune to distill that capability into a much cheaper, faster model for deployment.
Okay, the performance gains are undeniable, especially boosting smaller models. That's huge for development. But let's talk about production. For a framework to really take over, it needs to handle the messy reality of deployment reliability, maintenance, error handling, #4.1 comparison to existing libraries, the great prompt template divide.
That's a critical point. And this is where DSPy's core philosophy really contrasts with many existing libraries people might be familiar with, like LangChain or Llama Index. While those libraries are fantastic for connecting components, providing tool access, and giving you pre-built chains, they often still operate under what we could call the prompt template divide. Fundamentally, they often still rely on the developer manually crafting, managing, and debugging those complex hard-coded prompt strings. DSPy aims to solve that root problem.
Can you quantify that difference? Like, what does the code base of a system built with traditional prompt templating look like versus a DSPy approach?
There was an interesting, albeit informal, comparison mentioned in the source material. Looking at a prominent library's code base, they found things like, over 50 distinct string variables that were longer than 1,000 characters, each almost certainly complex prompt templates. They also found dozens of Python files seemingly dedicated just to storing prompts, like 12 files named prompts.py and another 42 named prompts.py. Think about maintaining that. If you need to update your standard chain of thought instruction or adapt to a quirk in a new model version, you might have to find and edit dozens of these scattered, opaque string literals.
Yeah, that sounds like a nightmare for maintenance. Massive technical debt waiting to happen. Hard to review, hard to test globally.
Exactly. Now contrast that with DSPy. At the time of that comparison, the DSPy framework itself reportedly contained zero handwritten few-shot demonstrations for specific tasks baked into its core code. It replaces those brittle, task-specific strings with reusable modular components, the modules, and relies on the compiler to generate the effective prompts automatically from data. The logic lives in structured Python code, using signatures and module composition, not hidden away inside giant text blobs. This makes the whole system vastly more maintainable, auditable, and adaptable. #4.2 building production-ready systems.
Okay, so the architecture itself promotes better maintenance. What about actual runtime resilience when things go wrong during inference with real user traffic?
Resilience is kind of built into the modular design philosophy. DSPy makes it much easier to implement robust error handling and fallback strategies. For example, within your program logic, if a complex module of chain of thought fails, maybe the LLM output doesn't parse correctly against the signature, or it gives a low confidence score, you can easily code a fallback. Your Python code can just say, okay, try again, but this time use a simpler DSPy. Predict module. Or try calling the module again, but use this alternative compiled prompt set. You can build multi-tier strategies for graceful degradation.
And what about data quality? Ensuring the output isn't just text, but structured data that downstream systems can reliably consume.
Yeah, that's crucial for any real application pipeline. DSPy encourages integrating with standard data validation tools, with Pydantic being a prime example. You define your expected output structure using a Pydantic model within your DSPy signature. After the LLM generates its response, DSPy can automatically pass it through your Pydantic model for validation before returning it to your application. If the LLM output is malformed or doesn't fit the schema, the validation fails right there, preventing bad data from propagating and causing errors later on. It enforces data contracts.
Makes sense. And for performance and production, dealing with latency and cost, especially with many users.
DSPy includes built-in support for caching. This is pretty standard but essential. It can automatically cache the results of LLM calls. If the same module is called with the same inputs or sufficiently similar ones, depending on the caching strategy, it can just return the cache result instead of making another expensive API call. This dramatically cuts down on both latency and cost for applications with recurring query patterns.
So it seems like the whole approach, modularity, compilation, validation, caching, really builds towards more robust production-grade systems. We even saw cases where it'd be humans.
Yeah, the evidence is mounting that this systematic approach often outperforms manual efforts, even by experts. The source mentioned Wang Lab winning the MetaQ competition, a medical QA challenge using DSTi. That's a strong validation in a complex domain. And there was that University of Maryland case study where on some specific complex labeling task, a system built and compiled with DSPy outperformed the best prompt manually engineered by an expert human by a margin of 50% in terms of accuracy.
50% better than an expert. That's not just a small improvement.
No, it suggests that for complex pipelines, the search space of effective prompts is just too vast and non-intuitive for humans to explore optimally by hand. The systematic, data-driven optimization really pays off. #4.3 future directions.
So where does DSPy go from here? What's on the roadmap for making this even more powerful or enterprise-ready?
Well, based on the typical evolution of such frameworks, a few areas seem likely focuses. Deeper integration with established MLOps platforms is probably key. Think better logging to tools like weights and biases or MLflow, easier deployment workflows, managing compiled program versions alongside model versions. Expanding beyond just text is another big one. Multimodal extensions seem inevitable, allowing this declarative programming and optimization approach to handle images, audio, maybe video, alongside text within a single unified program. And for wider enterprise adoption, continued focus on security, compliance, and governance features will be important. Things like ensuring data privacy during optimization, auditing model behavior, and providing controls needed in regulated industries. #outro.
This has been a fascinating look under the hood of DSPy. Let's try and boil down the absolute key takeaways for everyone listening.
I think the first big one is the fundamental shift away from writing prompts manually. DSPy replaces those brittle strings with structured declarative code using signatures and modules. That architectural change is huge for maintainability.
Right. And second, because the program is now explicit code, DSPy can compile it. Its teleprompters automatically optimize the prompts and few shot examples using data, finding high performing configurations that often beat human intuition.
And third, the results speak for themselves. The case study showed dramatic performance boosts from this compilation, often making smaller, cheaper open source models genuinely competitive with the big proprietary ones, which changes the whole game economically.
Absolutely. The philosophy of separating what you want, the signature, from how the LLM achieves it, the compiled module, seems like a crucial step towards making AI systems more like traditional, reliable software engineering. Okay, so that brings us to our final provocative thought for you, the listener, to chew on. If DSPy, through its compiler, can observe successful LLM behavior on a task and then automatically generate better prompts, better instructions, better few-shot examples than even human experts can craft manually, what does that imply about the future role of the AI developer?
Yeah, it's a big question, isn't it? Should developers start thinking of themselves less as prompt whisperers and more as, well, architects? Should the focus shift almost entirely to designing the high-level flow of the program, defining the signatures, choosing the right sequence of modules, retrieve, reason, generate, validate, and setting up the right evaluation metrics? Can we, and should we, trust the automated compiler to handle all the low-level nuances of LLM communication? Is the art of prompt engineering essentially becoming an automated compilation step? It really suggests a future where building with LLMs looks much more like systems design and traditional software engineering, relying on the compiler to optimize the core interactions.
Definitely something to think about. A potential future where the focus is purely on the architecture, trusting the tools to nail the execution. Food for thought. Thank you for joining us for this deep dive into DSPy. Until next time.